Well, I think right up front there is. If you start within our own military, every activity that we're doing in the region is coalition-based with the Jordanians and others. And so building a team of teams is an absolute foundational requirement. But it's hard because you're dealing across cultures, you're dealing across different command and control systems. So I think that becomes one. And then if you take it to the political level, it becomes even more important as you work to build coalitions and build relationships between key leaders. So I would say that's absolutely critical.
Now, in your book, Team of Teams, you go back 10 years in Iraq, the search for a terrorist leader, the head of AQI, al-Qaeda in Iraq, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. And in writing about the success in finding him, you say that required different management than you found when you first looked at what we were doing in Iraq.
Because we started with the assumption that if we were very, very proficient at what we do, our small team execution of our SEALs and Army Special Forces and Rangers, that would be enough to defeat the enemy. And we'd use the technology available to us. But what we really found was the difference in ability to execute was not going to lie in that tactical and technical level. It was going to be our ability to pull together the wider team, to share information very rapidly, to respond to changes on the battlefield, to show the kind of agility that was necessary to constantly adapt to an enemy that we describe as a shapeshifter. And so at the end of the day, it sounds a bit mundane, but changing our style of management and associated with that, our form of leadership became the critical way forward.
And being a military leader, you have stories, well, such as this, that you had regular video conferences, and you could be anywhere, and the other commanders could be, well, anywhere, including on the battlefield. And you found it was very important how you appeared, irritated, bored. It would have an effect on people. So that was something about military leadership, right? They do look to the commander.
And if you think of historically on the battlefield, the senior commander might be seen by privates either from a distance or if he rode by on his horse. But now we were across 27 countries, so I wasn't going to ride by on my horse and be seen. And the only way they could see me in most cases was digitally. And so we created this daily video teleconference for the entire command that people could hear, see, and interact every day. And part of it was just passage of information, but the other part became a critical part of leadership. They could see how I acted, my demeanor, and I could also see theirs. And I think that could reinforce things like resolve, positive optimism, and that sort of thing.
Another interesting observation you make is that you found that leadership in war is not really like a chess game. Chess, each side takes turns, and that's not war these days. You said it's more like gardening and you have to tend to it. Can you explain that?
I certainly can. I started my career with a heroic view of leadership in which I thought the best strategist was the chess master, the general on the battlefield who moved his forces around because he understood everything. And he was against his opponent, the opposing general, who was doing the same. But when I got into Iraq, instead of being across a chess table from Abu Musab al-Zarqawi and each of us following certain accepted rules of war, it was really like being across a table from a chess opponent in which all the pieces that they had could think for themselves, could coordinate among themselves, and operate whenever they wanted. They didn't have to follow any rules. Suddenly I found that no chess master could operate against that kind of networked organization that moved so quickly and adapted so rapidly. So we had to change ourselves. So instead of thinking myself as a chess master where I controlled each piece, I now think of leadership as a gardener in which you set conditions in the garden or the ecosystem. You create an environment in which the plants can grow, either flowers or fruit, because that's who really does the work, the plants. But the gardener, very importantly, creates conditions that allow that to happen.
Though you advise mainly corporations, your book does have these battlefield scenes. And by the way, it's got this really interesting couple of pages about President John F. Kennedy saying, we're going to land on the moon by the end of the 1960s. And you deal with how NASA had to change its management. But it makes me wonder, when you meet people in the corporate world who never served in the military, do they get it? Or you really have an effort to show them how one thing can apply to the other?
It's very interesting. Many get it immediately, but some take a little while because I start with the assumption that they think, okay, military people have a very limited scope of experience that's unique to them and not relevant to business. And it takes a little while. And one of the purposes of the book is to, as you correctly noted, it combines military stories, which really shows the experience that we have, but it also brings in many very similar civilian experiences. hospital experiences, as you mentioned, NASA, things like that that show, in many cases, the challenges in this new environment are almost identical. And as we can convince business leaders that their challenges really lie in this complex new environment, not in the fact that their particular situation is dramatically unique, then we find it very effective for them.
The title of this book that unfolds all those themes is Team of Teams. That's the lead author, retired General Stanley McChrystal. Three co-authors, two of them are former Navy SEALs. General McChrystal, thanks very much.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.